Welcome to the IPv6 Buzz podcast, where we dare to dive into the 128-bit address space wormhole. I'm Ed Horley with my co-host Tom Coffey and Scott Hoag. And today we're going to be talking about LinkedIn's IPv6 journey with our guest Frank Martin from LinkedIn. So, Frank, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, so let's jump straight into it and hit some questions in terms of what LinkedIn is doing with IPv6. So I guess the great place to start is, what was the original motivation for LinkedIn around adopting IPv6? Like, what was that sort of origin story? Where did this all come from?
I guess I think at the time when we explained it is that, you know, we are an internet company, and as internet company, then we need to lead a little bit in technology. So that was at the same time that there was the IPv6 World Day and Launch Day. So there was all this movement. And at the time, the DALI was in charge of the network, and he had started to deploy the network backbone and the infrastructure, IPv6. So we were looking at getting some application first on IPv6 and getting the site also on IPv6 to follow, you know, the big site provider, and to create this impetus. Also, it's, you know, getting our new technology, getting our engineers trained to the forefront of what is the internet. So as a company, I think we are always looking for innovation there.
Yeah, and maybe for the audience, and I don't know, Scott, Tom might want to pitch in too, but, you know, ISOC World IPv6 Day and IPv6 Launch, there were a whole slew of companies that were involved with that originally, and LinkedIn was one of the original companies that was involved with that. And correct me if I was wrong, 2011 for World IPv6 Day, right? That was June sometime.
I think it was around that time, yes. Well, we missed the launch. ISOC reached to us to participate, but it took us a little bit more time to get all things together. You know, you need to get all the department involved. You need to start to make a plan and everything. So we were not quite ready for the World IPv6 Day, but we follow 1 year after. What happened at the time, so the network was ready, Zed was looking for an application. At the time, I was managing the mail infrastructure, so that was relatively easy. I put the mail system on IPv6, one application that I fully control with the network folks. So that showed up, yes, we can do it. And then from there, then we went to the more complex things, which is to provide an IPv6 endpoint for the site. The difficulty is not too much to provide the IPv6 endpoint. You know, well, you need to find the hardware, you need to configure it, but it's everything that happens behind. What this IPv6 address that you pass to the web service, what will happen to it? Will it go into the database? Will it go into the data structure correctly, into all the code? So that's why you have to do your whole audit to make sure everything is going to work correctly. That required a little bit more coordination, and then we did it. So I think 2013, we had the mail application, and 1 year later, then our site was getting served over IPv6.
Cool. I mean, it's definitely a good point, because I don't think many people realize that just turning up the edge internet service and saying that you're done is necessarily the end all be all. And certainly for something as sophisticated as what LinkedIn is doing, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's not overly complicated, because, you know, once you reach a certain size of site, then your site is served by a proxy that from the traffic for the customers, you know, load balancer. So you just need to put an extra load balancer that serves the IPv6 traffic. So that part is relatively easy, but then you have to figure it out that everything is working behind it. So it depends on your size of your website and what you do with the code that control all these things.
Since LinkedIn was pretty early on the adoption cycle for V6, and certainly an advocate amongst the community of sort of helping people along in that way, was there any sort of direct benefits that LinkedIn saw from the adoption of IPv6? Because clearly that's been one of the challenges with working with many enterprises and other internet companies is, hey, you know, what do we get for investing in doing the work that we're doing to adopt IPv6? Do we get any tangible benefits? So what was there any that LinkedIn sort of wanted to highlight?
Since I look at IPv6, I've been on the Internet Society community for quite a while. And since I look at IPv6, you know, people have been asking, what's the killer app? What's the added feature? There's There haven't been any clear things like this. The only added feature is that you get more IP address, so you can put more device. The other one has always been around economical advantage. You won't have new feature, any new feature that appeared in IPv6 or get backported in IPv4. So you won't have new feature, new things, but it's the economical advantage. So as I say, we are an internet company, and we need to be, you know, relatively at the forefront of internet technology, because that's what gives us the economical advantage over other region, over other other platform, because we are ready before anybody else. So in terms of advantage, here in the US, many of the telco providers now are on IPv6, IPv6 only. As soon as they were ready, we were already ready. So that's gave us advantage for mobile phone to connect to our site. They don't have to go through a proxy device. They don't have to go to NAT. And we kind of see that the speed of connection is higher. A little bit less errors, latency. So that's what gave us, you know, and that's happening in other countries. You take India, I think I put a blog post, you know, on the Southeast Asia with India, China, that are taking advantage of IPv6. And you see new mobile phone provider, usually they go the IPv6 only way now. So we are ready, we have our site, we have had the expertise for quite a while. So that's what brings us IPv6 is getting us on the economical advantage.
That's great, Frank. That's great information. I'm curious what the biggest challenge you guys faced internally related to the adoption of IPv6 was as you worked through this process of bringing it up on the network and then getting it back into the code and making it available.
Yeah, so there's two aspects that we are doing at the moment. Let me say the three of them. So one, which is to front your website with IPv6. The second is to provide IPv6 connectivity to your employees. If you provide the website fronted with IPv6, then you need a way to test it. You need to make sure that the code works. So you need to provide a development environment to the employee that allows them to test the site over IPv6. And usually that goes in pair. And then the third one that we took, which is to change everything internally to IPv6. So we are in the process of dual stacking everything, getting that inside our data center. So it's still a long journey. And I would say the biggest challenge is a cultural shift. So you need to get the engineers to understand that IPv6 is not a second-class citizen, it's a first-class citizen. So if there is a problem on IPv6, then it needs to be treated like an IPv4 outage. When you develop the code, you don't put a comment to say, I'll do the IPv6 later.
Did that require more of a mandate where you just essentially said, this is thou shalt incorporate IPv6? Or was it more something where you could be, you know, a little more just sort of encouraging and folks would do the right thing?
I think it's a little bit of both. First, you need the buy-in from management that this is the way we want to go. In the beginning, you know, it kind of start off like maybe, you know, a couple of people that are driving the project, and then it expand to, you know, I don't know what many company calls the 20%. You know, you've got a little bit of freedom to work on some pet project. So you've got people that like this that, you know, join the project, join the event, and wants to work on IPv6 because it's cool, it's the technology, they are learning something new. And then you start to grow the pool of people that understand IPv6 in various team and organization. And then you need to transfer that to, this is part of the company, you know, this is part of your objective as an employee. Company gives objective. No, this is part of your objective to develop on IPv6, not as a side project or as something that you participate on your own and that your manager support, but no, it's your manager is telling you, no, you have to do it. So you gain the rest of all the people inside the company. I've been known to come to meeting for only one reason, to ask the IPv6 question. And it's nice when I go to meeting and I don't have to ask it because somebody else will.
So it's getting there and just asking the question, period.
Yeah. So people, you know, will know what's the story on IPv6. So I don't have to ask it. You know, it's not, oh yeah, this is a IPv6 guy. So, you know, that now it has converted into something which is part of, or starting to be part of the company culture.
And do you find that happening more now than, you know, with the time that's gone by?
Yes. And also, you know, employees, when they, because we have dual stack, you know, a lot internally. So if they don't can't reach over IPv6, then they open tickets by themselves to say, hey, I'm not getting the link on IPv6 for this resource or whatever. So it creates a visibility. More and more people are dealing with this protocol, the better.
That's really, I think, important for folks to realize that part of the culture change for adoption is really getting everyone to understand what's happening and why it's important. So that's very cool that LinkedIn has progressed that way and actually, to the point where they're mature enough that it's not just help desk folks and narrow sets of individuals that really understand what's going on, but the day-to-day employees actually understand what's happening there.
Yeah, and getting more familiar, the right command, you start to be able to... when you debug something, you don't debug it only on IPv4 anymore. So this conversation, and that's very helpful because, everybody's talking with vendor, with third party, with open source software. So they need to have this conversation, from the beginning. It's not once a channel, or I don't have to go and look everywhere to make sure that it's happening.
So do you feel like out of the sort of challenges that you folks have worked through, have there been any sets of external factors that sort of impacted IPv6 adoption that were maybe really unusual or unexpected? Was there things around, what in terms of maybe operational processes or technical things that you folks ran into? What was that like in terms of things that are outside of your immediate control? You have to either rely on other people or third-party vendors. What were the things that were hiccups for LinkedIn around the adoption?
I think the rule... you take open source software vendor, even internal software. I think the rule is you need to ask the question 1 year in advance. You've got a vendor and you want them to provide some IPv6. You need to ask the question, at least 1 year in advance, because they will take the question, they will ponder on it, then it will go through their system and et cetera, and then really cycle. And you may have finally a product with IPv6 the way you like, 1 year from now. So that's long timeline. And that's why you need to do your assessment as soon as possible so you can ask this question early on. So that arrives in time when all the pieces need to fit together. The thing that also that was a little bit surprising to me is that I found a ton of course on IPv6 for network engineers. I couldn't find much resource for software developers. The best information I got was this document that I think Irene put or to code for IPv6. They explained a little bit some case, with Python, with Java, with C, to make sure that you create a universal listener that will listen on whatever protocol you give. There's few software engineers that worry about communication between application, but these are the ones that are building the library that will allow system to talk to each other. And then they need to understand the difference of the protocols, and they need to make sure that they are protocol agnostic when they code. I haven't found something really tailored for software engineers.
Yeah, I think the only one that I'm aware of is Dan York's book from O'Reilly, The Migrating Applications to IPv6. I don't remember when that one originally came out. But I think it's up there in terms of age, but I imagine it's still completely probably appropriate in terms of at least a starting point for those that are on the audience side. If you're a developer and you're interested, might be a good place to start.
Yeah, and from a software point of view, your server will have two stack. So there's a way to rank IPv4, IPv6 address, which one you're going to use, what strategy you are going to use. Are you going to do IPv6, fall back to IPv4, IP eyeball? Then it opens a number of questions. These questions are also interesting for building resiliency in your application. That's a side benefit of, I've got option. Which option are taking? Which one will avoid me problems? Which one will reduce my lag between applications? So it opens a new set of questions, which are interesting also. But you need to understand, the difference and how your application will react.
Well, and also you need to understand how the operating systems are passing you things, because each operating system is doing things slightly differently in terms of handling things like RFC 6724, right? The source address selection process, and then how they handle happy eyeballs. Is it handled in the operating system? Is it handled in the browser?
Yeah, and it goes all the way. And, this is also something that I found out when I did just the mail, because when you want to reach a domain, there's an MX. The MX goes point to host with different set of priority. Host may have different IP address on two different protocols. So how do you organize and rank all that to contact, which one will be your first priority connection? There's some help, but you've got the operating system that makes a decision at those level, but you've got the application, your mail software, that makes another decision based on the MX, and if it's a little bit sophisticated, will remember past connection and will make a decision of which one is better.
I think that's probably the biggest thing for operators. Once the, you know, the deployment's sort of done and you're ready to go for actually turning on V6, is understanding the nuance of what the applications and software stacks are actually doing, and then being able to troubleshoot and work your way through that, and then being able to work with obviously software developers or third parties to be able to be like, hey, this is the behavior I would like to see versus maybe what's actually happening, or being able to actually modify those sets of behaviors with the right tools to get the outcomes that you want. That's really hard. And that just takes time and practice, I guess, in terms of doing that.
Yeah, indeed. And this is where also, you know, the culture shift needs to happen, because people need to understand the command, understand the troubleshooting that needs to happen. You can read it in the book, but until you've got a problem and you have to debug it, you don't earn too much experience point.
LinkedIn's an example of an organization in the innovators category, aggressive about IPv6 deployment and obtaining competitive advantages, operational efficiency, higher performance. LinkedIn really leads by example. Enterprises, also internet companies, really, right, can compare themselves to LinkedIn and then follow in your footsteps. One thing I really appreciate is LinkedIn's IPv6 engineering team has a blog. And to many enterprises, it's probably surprising to see that 2 years ago, LinkedIn passed, you know, the 50% IPv6 milestone. So we'll add those links to those articles to the show notes so you could read about LinkedIn's success there. What other lessons would you share with the audience around IPv6, other lessons that you've learned?
So when you say, well, we are going to put IPv6 in the data center, that means that we need to provision and configure at scale. There's another area which is of importance, which is everything which is in firmware. And if you go also in IoT world, then you have a software which is written in the firmware, and upgrading firmware is always more complicated than upgrading a pure software. So that's why it's a difficulty, you know, get your network boot over IPv6 and get this change done into hardware that have got a shelf life for at least 3 years. So 1 year in advance, get your vendor to have something ready, and then by the time they have something ready, then you have all the equipment that is there already that you will need to replace. And that may take an extra 3 years or more before you get everything to a common standard across everything. I think that's one of the frontier, which is everything which is in firmware and making sure that it's IPv6 only, or at least capable of working on an IPv6 only network, even if you still do old stack.
Yeah, we hear about, you know, certain appliances or other systems that still need to, you know, do updates over IPv4, or management plane access could still be over IPv4, or some of their control traffic could still be IPv4, so they can't work in a V6 only environment. The vendor should really think about that when they design their product.
But yeah. And there's the other aspect, you know, on the security land. So I think there have been a couple of public articles, you know, people say, well, you know, I don't need to worry about security on IPv6, my network is IPv4 only, but your device are IPv6 ready, you know, all the operating system have IPv6 enabled. They will create a local interface on IPv6, even if it's not globally routing. So you've got IPv6 on your network already, even if you haven't actively enabled it. So that's when things, I've seen a couple of articles of where miscreants have used IPv6 to communicate within the network and nobody was seeing anything. Getting also at the forefront of this internet technology and deploying IPv6 means that your security department is fully aware of IPv6, has fully integrated it, and knows how to pen test, troubleshoot, detect anything on both protocol.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Yes.
Frank, what's like one IPv6 challenge that really remains for LinkedIn at this point, if there's anything in particular that you're kind of stuck with and that you wish you could get a resolution for sooner than later?
Well, there's still you know, a little bit of software then and there that needs to better work on IPv6. I think we are in a good place. I think we are progressing a little bit more organically at the moment. There's still the firmware area that is still a little bit weak, but you know, the whole community is helping. it's a culture change to get there. I think also this is a part also, I think, you know, when you look at the IPv6 statistic, you talk about the 50%. North America, in the US, we see that 50%, we pass 50% of page view on our site. But when you look at it more carefully, then this is a consumer, mobile consumer access. It's still lagging in enterprise. This is where we need to push the change in enterprise, because there's a set of problems and questions in enterprise that is going only to be resolved when more and more of us doing the loose tech. Because, you know, vendor needs to have more open ticket from their customers to start to look at some of the issues. We are leading and we are telling certain vendors, this is what we want. And then, you know, they listen to us based on our merit. But at the same time, you know, if more and more companies and enterprise are adopting IPv6, then that will be an easier conversation. Deployment of IPv6 in ISP land, mobile and consumer looks good in many countries. In the enterprise, people have got IPv4 network. If your company is not necessarily growing in size, this is not necessarily you know, a pain factor. You see the cost of acquiring IPv4 public IP address. Even if you have got in your backend RFC 1918 private IP address, still in the front, you know, if you're growing, you provide more service, etc. So you need more and more public IPv4 address, and they start to cost. The cost of IPv4 address is starting to show up in balance sheet. There's a few companies that have got this growth that are feeling the pain and that are looking at options. But if your company is more or less stable, then there's no pain that require, you know, action.
It leads to the next question. Our audience is definitely, I think, skewing towards the enterprise side of things. And as you point out, I think for a lot of them, they haven't really felt the pain of address exhaustion directly. You know, maybe it comes up sort of obliquely when they deal with, say, acquiring another company and having overlapping address space. But as far as running out of addresses internally, it seems to be less of an issue. But I guess we're still always casting about for the next piece of advice, the next best piece of advice that we can give enterprise, our enterprise listeners related to IPv6. And that's why it's great when we have guests such as yourself on who've made such tremendous progress with IPv6 in a relatively short period of time. And if our audience could take away really one point about IPv6, what would you want them to know and why?
There's a part which is also, you know, training your workforce. There's this area which is IPv6 that will lead to a couple of discussion. It's also interesting when you bring a new protocol because you are going to relook at everything. That's also an interesting point in time. I've learned so much about how LinkedIn operates. I was postmaster, so had interesting but also, you know, specialized field between product, marketing, security, legal, and the mail servers. But that was on the whole company. And with IPv6, I had an overview of the whole company, every software, every piece of technology. You look at it, will it be compatible, etc. So it's a really interesting endeavor to do an IPv6 that's, you know, give you a stock take. And that helped me in many other projects that I'm doing to understand where things are and how they operate between each other. So I would say, you know, for people that want to adopt it, that's also good way to energize your workforce, figure out where you are and where you can innovate, because you are relooking at everything.
It really is one of those things that if you don't understand how things are working in V4, you're going to learn a lot of lessons really quickly when you turn on V6. Right?
Yes, that, but also, you know, you may not have people that have got a good overview. In being an organization, you start to, you know, work in silo or start to look at very specific problems. So it's interesting to see it across, you know, and see how, oh, well, all this team have got exactly the same problem. So let's try to solve it together. So that helps a lot. I know some people here joke with me that my other title should be a dumpster diver, because you go, you know, you go and relook at everything. You know, you check, you know, is this stuff works? If I move it to IPv6, will it work? And sometimes you enable something and they say, oh, it's IPv6. And then you look at it and you say, no, your stuff never work. So, you know, don't blame it on IPv6. You know, so you need to do the due diligence to look that, you know, is it working in IPv4? Is it working correctly and everything? So you can say, well, when I bring IPv6, this is what I bring. I'm not changing your problems.
Cool. Well, unlike V6, we've run out of space for the podcast, but thanks so much to today's guest, Frank Martin with LinkedIn. How can the folks in the audience actually follow you on the internet? You got blogs, books, Twitter, I know. Hold on a sec. Tom has something to add in here, right? Because we've got some music from Frank too, right? So
yeah, that's right. Frank is also a composer. Thanks to Frank for providing some of his music to use for our podcast.
Thank you very much, Tom, for that. Between fellow musician, I'm having a little bit of fun creating some music, and especially with analog synthesizer. No programming, no coding. Yeah, if you want to, so on IPv6, I guess, if you can spell my name correctly, so F-R-A-N-C-K, then you should find me just at IPv6. We've got a LinkedIn engineering blog on IPv6 with a couple of articles that will be some value for you. And otherwise, just put my name, or I use my website is Pitchy Mango. So either spell my name, spell Pitchy Mango, and you should find my music a little bit on every platform. And San Francisco is a very nice place for, what do you call it, experimental electronic music. Or it's one of the best places of electronic music, too.
As a complete aside, I have to say that the most impressive thing that I learned about Frank was when I was talking with Veronica over at Microsoft, and she said that you used your Peachy Mango sticker as an ID when you were overseas for an event. And I thought that was just absolutely hysterical, because for folks that are in the audience, his Peachy Mango sticker has a picture of himself on it. So it was just fantastic that you use that as an ID.
Yeah, they wanted to keep my ID. No way. Let me give you something else.
That was great.
Perfect.
Well, you can reach the IPv6 Buzz podcast on Twitter at IPv6 Buzz. You can also hit up each of us on Twitter. Tom is at IPv6 Tom. Scott is at Scott Hoag, and I'm at E. Horley. Thanks so much for listening to the IPv6 Buzz. You can find us on the Packet Pushers or any of your favorite podcast apps. Just search for IPv6 Buzz. And please check out all the other great technical content over the Packet Pushers at packetpushers.net. So long, and until next time, we'll see you on the internet. The IPv6 internet, that is.
You'll never find me. Thanks for listening to IPv6 Buzz, a podcast devoted to truth, justice, and 128 bits of address space. IPv6. You'll never find me. You'll never find me. You'll never find me.